Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropft uns den Regen auf mein Kopf. Hink wie ein Deckerbus, ist die kleine Fahrt im Top. Geht mir kein Sach mit, die Tropft.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold, and this week we have part two of my conversation with the very talented, very original Ashley Ray, which I recorded this summer, and she's pretty damn amazing. I hope you enjoyed part one. I just got back from Florida, where I had a fantastic show at the Sunshine Cathedral for the performing arts, and what a great crowd, and very diverse too. It was lesbos and gay men and straight people, and it was really, it just feels so good to laugh. It feels so good to laugh and to get, you know, just get together and for an hour and a half, just like not think about all the shit that's going on in this world, which is a lot of shit. But what was fun was Sunday, I went to a brunch for alumni of a wider bridge who went on, the mission I went on this summer, the LGBTQ+ mission I went on in Israel this summer. And it was, I mean, of course, all we could talk about was what's going on in Israel right now. But it was so nice to be around Jews and gays and gay Jews and Jewish gays. No, it was just, it was really wonderful. So, we talked a lot about how hard it is that when you talk about this topic, it, you know, someone's always going to be angry. But the thing that I really want to say is that I never realized there were so many experts on the Middle East crisis because a couple of weeks ago, they all came out of the closet because these people know the entire history and what they're protesting. So that's great that everyone's done their due diligence. Really, people, read about the conflict. Do your homework. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. And then form your opinion. But do the due diligence. Because this is ridiculous. The misinformation that is being spread. I just want to also say, the feminists who don't speak up about women being raped, all the feminist organizations who don't speak up about what Hamas did to these women and babies, and the LGBTQ community, that QIA plus, that is protesting, and I'm talking about anti-Israel and saying pro-Hamas things. You can criticize Israel and their government, just like you can criticize our country and their government. But if you're LGBTQ and you're pro-Hamas, which a lot of them are saying Hamas is resistance fighting, Hamas, they're a bunch of terrorists. Go, please go be my guest and go be gay under the Hamas regime, under the in Gaza. Go be gay, have fun, and enjoy. Nobody wants innocent lives lost. I think we can all agree on that. But I have to say, Israel does have a right to defend itself in this horrible situation. And I just, you know, I wish people would just do their homework and stop and stop scrolling and watching all this shit. It's not good for you. Take a fucking break, even though it's all I can think about. But anyway, so I had a lot of fun in Fort Lauderdale. I went to this place called 9F, which I've been to before. It's a bar and it's owned by two women and it's just lovely. So Carol and Nancy. And yeah, so wait. Oh, so let me tell you about all the stuff that's going on. So this Saturday, I'm at Soul Drills inside Sunnybrook in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Pottstown, Pennsylvania, where the book, The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store, which I read a month or two ago, that book by James McBride takes place there. So I'm so excited to go. That's on Saturday night, the 10/28, and the amazing Liz Glazer is opening for me. It's going to be such a great, great show. So that's the 28th of October. And then I am in Long Island on the 3rd of November. And then I'm at the Marcus Jewish Community Center of Atlanta on November 11th. But on November 6th, people, at Gotham Comedy Club at 9:30 p.m., I'm doing a benefit for the National Coalition Against Censorship. And that is a star-studded event. It is going to be so amazing. I'm hosting. We have Mark Normand. We have Rich Voss. We have Adrian Iapolucci. We have Yamanika Saunders. We have Matteo Lane. It's going to be, and two other special guests that are very, very beloved and hilarious comedians. It's going to be a great event. That's November 6th, Monday night, 9:30 p.m. I know it's late for some of you, but it's going to be a great show. And 100% of the proceeds are going to the National Coalition Against Censorship. So that is that. What else do I have to tell you? I don't know. I'm not looking forward to daylight savings time ending, and I'm not looking forward to my total knee replacement surgery on November 20th. But other than that, I look forward to hearing from you, and I'm so happy that you listen. And I hope you enjoy part two of my conversation with Ashley Ray. Sit back, relax, forget your troubles. Come on, get happy. You can't forget about it. I know you can't. But just, you know, focus on something else for a little bit and take good care of yourself. And sit back and relax and enjoy part two of my interview with Ashley Ray. You went into this advertising job and you start doing stand-up. You start doing open mics.
Yeah,
and you're working during the day.
Yeah.
And then you get, this totally reminded me of me, because when I started doing stand-up in college, and then I got a job in advertising when I graduated, but I still went out and did stand-up at night because I didn't want to be one of the comics who was like, I have no money.
Yeah, exactly.
And I wanted health insurance because I'm a Jew. And so I took care, you know, I did the job during the day and I went out at night. And you then got a job at Google.
Yeah.
And you were working at Google and you'd have like these meetings and you'd go right out to do stand up in like a business suit.
Yeah. I would truly go to Google 8 a.m., get there early so I could look like I was doing a lot of work and no one would notice when I left at 4 to get to an open mic sign up. And I would just work all day, leave immediately in whatever I was wearing, do stand up in like whatever.
You'd ask for the first spot.
Banana Republic. And at that point in Chicago, there were so many mics and shows you could go to that I would hit an open mic, go do like two or three showcases at different bars. And I was also freelance writing for the AV Club and Onion still at that point. So I would sometimes have like TV reviews or articles due by 1 a.m.
Right.
Go home, write an article about like an episode of Insecure, Blackish.
Right.
Get some work done for my actual day job, like a client pitch deck or something. Go to sleep, wake up at 6 a.m., get ready and do it all again.
Okay. So I want young comics to listen to that. Okay. And this is pre, I'm going to make a video of me taking a shit on the toilet.
Yeah.
And there's no toilet paper left on the roll. And then I become a huge sensation. And I book a comedy room and I don't know how to do stand up.
And I don't know how. Yeah. It was really that environment of, and I'm lucky that I think that's a good reason why I went to Chicago. You can be kind of freer with the stand up because the stakes aren't the same. You're not worried about industry. So I just did a lot of weird stuff. I would do weird.
It was, like, you were free.
Yeah. I would do weird character based stuff. I would do like presentation style comedy, just finding my voice. And yeah, I love Chicago for that.
Yeah, and you want to be somewhere where you can take risks and not pay for them because, you know, so-and-so's in the audience and they don't want to see you again because they saw you do that set they didn't
like. Yeah, in New York, and also my Google job, they had me on a client that was in New York. So 2 weeks out of every month, they'd fly me to New York, let me stay in like a nice Google hotel. And while I was there, I would just go to as many open mics and shows as I could. I would like leave a client dinner and just go to like the cellar, go somewhere and go to a show, the Lantern and just try to perform as much as I could. And then in the morning I would be right there back at the Chelsea Google office, ready to do a presentation for E-Trade or something.
You know, it just reminds me, not that everything's about me. So last night I went to a friend's birthday celebration at someone I went to college with. I've known for 40 something years and I'm in Provincetown. And so he's visiting for the week for his birthday. And I went over and we were talking and he was saying, you missed everything. Like I had this group of friends and he said, you know, we would have a party. You'd come for 5 minutes and then go out and do sets all night. And he said, I remember that you missed you missed so much stuff. And then we found a photo of New Year's Eve and it's everyone but me. And he said, when people say, you know, he always says, no, she, and I was just, you were just remind me of me. I would work, and then out all night.
I was just thinking recently, the last three New Year's Eves, I've been on stage when the clock struck midnight. I've been doing shows, every single one.
You know, Ashley, you're going to get to a point where you go, fuck New Year's Eve, and you don't work on New Year's Eve. Now, I know it's good money, but it's a fucking hell gig. But guess what happened? My lover, Elisa, her birthday's New Year's Eve. And since like 2009, I have not worked on New Year's Eve. I've celebrated her birthday. Woo!
That's the dream. I can't say no to it. I did the store last year. And I was like, oh, that'll be special. I'll start my year at the Comedy Store. It's like I'm not there all the time. Like,
okay. I really want to talk in this last section of our interview about the fact that you really studied minority television and international television. I don't know if you know this about me, but I had an off-Broadway show in 2012 called The Judy Show, My Life is a Sitcom. And it was about my addiction to sitcoms growing up and how I thought I'd be on one when I got older. But it was really about how those TV shows, like you said, SNL and the comedians got you out of your headspace and gave you a coping mechanism. But those TV shows that I grew up with were actual members of my family, like in my head.
Yes.
They were a huge part of my upbringing and how I grew up. And I have often thought about growing up, I grew up, we lived in Elizabeth, New Jersey until I was about almost six. And then we moved to a very racist town because the town that we wanted to move in, the realtor told my father in so many words, you're a Jew, so you shouldn't come here. So we lived in like an Italian Jewish neighborhood, and they were very racist on the other side of town. And I, when I did this show, I would have talkbacks and people, and I thought, who cares about that? And it was amazing how television and sitcoms affected people. The fact that there's no representation. I mean, I know as a lesbian, you know, there was no representation. I hear now from comics who were like, I couldn't believe you were talking about your gay family and your kids when in the 90s, like I,
yeah.
And that to me, but I just love that. Okay. First of all, with your research, Ethel, I did some research too that, you know, Ethel Waters was the first Black person on TV. Although I do remember Moms Mabley when I was growing up, and she was the first Black person to actually get a show.
To get a show, and to, you know, her performances, some of them were recorded and like used in certain things. So I think she wasn't the first performance for television, but you know, one of those technicalities. But.
Right. You focused on minority television and you went to Germany. Yes. This is amazing. You went to Germany to study why certain TV shows resonated with German audiences. Why did you, and we'll get to those shows in a second, but why did you pick Germany?
I mean, I had always been so inspired and moved by shows that had no representation for me. You know, I'm a bisexual Black girl who grew up in the Midwest, and I could connect with Golden Girls, King of Queens. You know, it didn't matter that no one looked like me. I could connect to these shows. And my favorite director when I was 16 was Ingmar Bergman, who is this very dark Swedish director who actually he does do some comedy. And I was obsessed with him. And people would be like, why are you this Black girl from the Midwest obsessed with this Swedish director? And I thought, I don't know, let me study it and figure out why.
Right.
So at Williams, I made my own major, basically. I applied for all these grants. Yeah, they gave me like $30,000 just to go anywhere to study this. And I wanted to go to Sweden, but I was also studying German language in college. So in order for my dual credits to work, because I triple majored to get my German degree, I had to go to Germany instead
of
Sweden.
Let's stop the podcast right now. You triple majored?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
I didn't lose that competitive edge thing when I went to college.
You triple. I could barely major. Okay. So it was German. Was it German?
German language, English with the focus on minority television studies, and then German history with a focus on international media.
Okay. What the fuck? And why the obsession with Germany? As a Jew, so, I need to ask that question.
Yeah, I get it. So it really wasn't going to be Germany. I grew up in Northern Illinois where there's so many Swedish people, and I love Swedish culture, and I love Swedish food, and I wanted to learn Swedish. I loved Ingmar Bergman. I go to college. They don't have Swedish.
Right.
I'm just like, that's what I want to learn, and they don't have it. And then someone was like, German is the closest thing. If you learn German, it'll be so easy to learn Swedish.
So do you speak German?
Yeah, now I'm conversational. I used to be fluent.
Wow.
But now I can like read it. I can have
scares
like an
the
order
shit out
stuff.
Of me, that, yeah. You should study Yiddish. You could study Yiddish.
Yeah, I can understand a lot of Yiddish. And I went, but I never ended up learning Swedish. I just got so stuck on the German, and I got really into the history, my biggest focus was on East German queer cinema. So, which sounds so neat. Yeah, East German queer cinema is what really pulled me in and made me go, oh, this country I thought was so, you know, conservative, fascist, has this dark history.
Right.
It has had these little sparks of people who have tried to rebel and who have created art. And that really became my focus.
I love that. You also, I heard in an interview you did, and it made me so happy, you said that you felt similar to Greg Giraldo, who went to Harvard Law School. He was a good friend of mine. And that sort of, you know, smarts and education pushed you
a
little bit.
He was genius. He was my icon. I thought he was so brilliant.
I wanted
to be
his
like
son's doing stand-up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I love that. I mean, I just wanted to be like the female version of him. I thought I would see him on, Crosstalk, Crossfire, Cross.
He was on
Colin Farrell
show.
Tough Crowd. Yeah.
I hated being on that show with him. I used to go, Greg, I don't even want to be here to argue with you.
Yeah. And he was just always so on it. That's what made me want to be in debate. I just thought he was amazing. He's another comic who's like jokes I would steal in sixth grade and perform on stage. I just in my comedy thought like I can be really clever about these things. You can be smart. I can study this other stuff. For a moment in my life, I thought, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. I want to focus on true like foreign journalism. I don't want to be funny. And I realized that was more of a burden I had placed on myself, that I thought, like, as this Black woman, it's my responsibility to take on changing the world and working for the Innocent Project. And that's, like, what'll make my mom proud of me. And all I really wanted to do was, like, improv. I just wanted to, like, go join the state and, like,
I'm going to introduce you to Greg Jr. when you come to New York.
Please.
He's the greatest.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also at the same time, he dealt with like a lot of dark issues and, you know, I had that drive and that need to be so competitive, I think did have some, you know, negative influences on my life. I struggled with a lot of depression when I started stand up. It was a lot.
Yeah.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TV shows, by the way, since everyone's wondering, that most resonated with German audiences were How I Met Your Mother and Family Guy. And you said that Family Guy, they thought it was an accurate portrayal of Americans and their political belief. I mean,
they didn't see it as like the satire we see, you know, we know it's making fun of these sitcom tropes because they don't have those same tropes. They don't know, oh, you're making fun of the doofy dad with the hot wife.
Right.
They're just like, oh, this is the standard there. You know, men are so big and kind of doofusy and the women take care of everything in the house. Which, I mean, yeah, it's basically true. And they thought How I Met Your Mother, the Barney character, we see him as a gross sex pest, you know?
Right.
He's disgusting. Over there, men had posters of him. He's like their Scarface.
Oh my God.
Over there, they're like, he's the Uberman. She has the blue eyes. He's blonde. he gets all the women. And men there truly didn't realize, like, he's a character that we hate.
Right,
like, he's there to be laughed at. They were just like, oh, I love Barney. I bought his book when they did that, like, stupid Barney's Rules book.
Yeah.
Men there were obsessed with Barney.
It's crazy. You know, when I think back, I know that Amos and Andy was like a big Black television show at the time. But for me, I remember Julia. I was a little girl, and Julia was a nurse, a single mom and a nurse. And it was huge. I remember her on the cover of magazines, and I loved that show. And she was beautiful. And, I mean, I also remember
What's it called? Yeah.
That was one of the shows that inspired me to pick that major, because by the time I was in college, it was so hard to find it anywhere to watch. This was the like move to streaming, and a lot of Black shows weren't being included in that shift. So I think my professor had VHS copies she found in her basement that she like let me borrow.
Wow.
So yeah.
I mean, that's the one Black woman. I mean, also on To Sir With Love, there was a Black teacher, I think. Yeah. I mean, this was, you know, here I am growing up and I see Julia. That gets canceled like 2 or 3 years in or something. And then Good Times. And yeah. Good Times, I mean, was the zeitgeist. Like him saying dynamite. And now he's like Mr. Right Wing. I don't know what the fuck happened to him, but
yeah, I gotta ignore what they're like today. But yeah, that's like the golden era of Black TV. It's
right,
like first golden era. Yeah,
and there is this family, and they're living in the projects, and I love that show, and not because they lived in the projects, because they were a family that reminded me of my family. I love the youngest son. I love the sister. Yeah. I mean, she was great as the mother. She was just the best.
Love Michael Lowe.
Yeah. It was great. So then we have that. And then we have the Jeffersons, which is the complete opposite of Good Times. And it's, first of all, best theme song of any television show ever. We're moving on up.
I do like the Good Times theme song more.
Yeah, it was good too.
Yeah, it's good. I just love how they hit that hanging in a chow line. That's just
Good Times.
See, you gotta hit it. Yes.
Good Times. Yeah. We better got them. Da 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 da.
Good times. Like that's like a gospel
song. And it would get you so psyched. You're like, okay, yeah, good.
Like,
go.
Oh, we're watching Good Times.
Yeah. How do you think the Jeffersons, I mean, they dealt with such racism, and then there was the interracial couple. And then I know they did a live version of it recently over the pandemic, and they had to edit it. They had to take out the N-word. I mean,
I think realize that at this time it is a golden era of TV, not of Black television, which, you know, yeah, Norman Lear's a white man, but at the same time he allowed these Black comedy writers so much freedom they'd never had before to use the N-word to address topics that people people were like, oh my gosh, how could you say that on like All in the Family? He allowed that to happen. He didn't really censor them and say, hey, you got to care about like Black respectability, politics. You want to make sure you're representing your people in the best way. No, it was about what's funny and what's real. In the 90s, that wasn't really the same case. When you get the Cosbys, there is this concern of, well, you have to think about respectability politics. We don't want people to think Black people just live in the projects. You don't want to be like a show like Good Times. It's more censored and more, you know, for a white audience to feel like, oh, I'm learning about what Black people are like, versus this is just something that's going to make everyone laugh.
How do you think Norman Lear helped Black representation on television?
I mean, he basically created a lot of the original shows that proved to people we can make popular shows, that people will watch the shows that we are in, that are about us, that we don't need to be side characters, sidekicks. We can be the main character and get an audience. I think that's what you see with like Sanford and Son, the Jeffersons.
Oh, we love Sanford and Son.
Love Sanford
and Son. Oh my God, that was a great show.
Great theme song. And I think without those, we wouldn't see, you know, that was like the...
I'm sorry, you're making me,
But that's how Black TV writers, a lot of the big ones got in the door, was that finally there were shows that needed Black people. They needed a Black person there to go, hey, is this really what a Black person sounds like? You know, so...
The Cosby Show. First of all, I grew up with Bill Cosby. I grew up with the cartoon. I grew up with the Jell-O commercial. I grew up with him. I find him to be the most important human being ever, yet a brilliant stand-up, but really disgusting. Do you think the fact, or do you believe that that show should never be on the air again? Because I felt like that was a big cultural moment, as you were just speaking about, that show where we had the lawyer and the doctor and, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think the effect, or do you think they should be able people should be able to see that show because of.
Yeah, it's difficult because obviously I believe that we need to maintain and hold on to as much of Black TV as we can. It's so easy right. for this history to be lost. We've seen what's happened with other shows that like Rock. It was an amazing Black show. You can't find it anywhere now.
Right.
And yes, Cosby's horrible, but there are all these other people in the show who have had such a wonderful impact on Black culture that to just treat it like a complete just Black blank space and to erase yeah. it seems just more harmful. You know, I think we need to embrace the fact that it's the total history of it, which is the highs and the lows. I think we're smart enough people where we can watch the show or, you know, talk
or
about
separate the place. Art from the, yeah, the artist.
And also, you know, talk about its place in culture and also right. go and fuck Cosby. Like there's
yeah, exactly.
room for both
exactly.
where we can be like, and at the end of the day though, you know, fuck him.
Right.
Yeah.
He's disgusting, but this was such an important show. You're a television critic. You have done major television criticism. I have, first of all, when I've heard you speak about being a critic, you've, unlike most critics, you wanted to write in celebration of television, not this sucks, you know, like most white critics.
Yeah.
You know, I want to just know, you started as a TV critic, then you became a creative. And I want to know how being a creative person, someone who is performing, changed the way you wrote about television.
Yeah, I really loved being a critic because I had such an appreciation and love for TV, but I always knew I wanted to write TV. I wanted to keep doing stand-up. So at a certain point, when I was really doing a lot of stand-up and getting festivals, I had to, you know, tell my editors, I don't feel right, you know, critiquing a show that a comic I've done a show with writes on. Or I'm not going to, you know, write, I'm not going to critique someone else's stand-up set. That's, you know, I'm not going to do that unless it's someone like Tiffany Haddish, who's super famous and,
right.
you know, not like someone I'm going to run into.
Right.
So I started kind of putting up those rules with myself because I understood that to be a creative, you have to pick a side. You can't really toe the line because mm-hmm. creatives do not like that. And so in 2020, I completely stopped doing TV criticism. I decided to only focus on reality TV from then out because I got my first TV writing position then. I'd moved to LA and so many standups were like, oh, I think you're so funny. But, you know, I did read that AV Club review you wrote of a documentary I made 8 years ago that like you didn't give a good
right.
grade. So I hate
right.
you forever.
Right.
And I was at a party and Quinta Brunson came up to me. We started talking and she's like, I think you're really funny. You know, I think you're so smart. And I think you need to choose. I think you need to pick.
Yeah.
Are you a creative or are you a critic? Because if you're a creative, you have to be over here with us. You have to be creating, putting your heart out in the world for other people to critique it. And right now you're hiding behind the critique and the creativity isn't out there. You know, we're engaging with your articles, your criticism, but at that point, you know, I probably only had a few stand-up clips. You know, I hadn't done like a special. I don't have an album that people can, you know, right. sit and tear apart.
Have you read a critique of anything you've done?
One thing about being a critic, especially for a place like the AV Club, is you learn pretty quickly. You don't have to read what people say about
right,
you.
Right, right. I don't read reviews. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't read it. And the AV Club, I would get so many commenters who were like, angry white guys who would just be like, I don't even like that the AV Club is writing about Black-ish. And what happened to this site just writing about shows that matter, like The Sopranos?
Shut the fuck up.
I was just so used to ignoring that. But, you know, now I have way more sets up. I have a podcast that people rate me on constantly.
Right.
People, you know, talk about whether they like my jokes, my tweets, everything.
Right.
But I honestly, I love that I came from being a critic because I just don't care. I don't have, I love that I was a critic, you know? I know what they say doesn't matter.
Right.
They're just some person making it up.
Hey everyone, did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces, but I live in an apartment, and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew, the space looks so much better. And I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know, it's made this more of a home. It's the best. And Elisa has some too. And she loves them. And she talks to them too. But she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
I want to know, do you think multicams will ever come back? The sitcoms I grew up with. Do you think that genre will ever come back?
I do.
Really?
And there are some shows making it happen that have been...
Wow.
Some successful. So they brought back Night Court as a multicam.
Yes, yes.
And I love it. I think they're doing such a good job of it. It feels like a way to refresh the format. They did have Call Your Mother, which had Kara's. Oh, I don't remember that lady's name, so I'm not even going to try. You know, they've had some shows recently where I think networks are understanding, hey, people still want this kind of humor. People still, you know, watch this kind of television. We even see streamers doing it. Netflix, they've had a few shows now that are multicam. So I think it works and people want to do it. It just has to be good content. It has to really be a strong script. It has to be really strong comedy. Night Court
and the characters,
The characters,
really,
you know,
relatable.
The new Night Court, they have so many jokes per second. It is
right.
They know how to do it, but I think, you know, in this day and age when everything is a dramedy,
I know.
Yeah, where it's like that's not a that's making me cry.
I know, and they call dramedies comedy. Like some of them, they're like the comedy, and you're like, no, it's not a comedy.
It's just a drama. It's just 30 minutes.
Right.
So, yeah, I think we have to get...
And a comedian's on it. So, no.
Yeah, and a comedian's on it. Right. It's like, no, we have to get people back into TV shows with a lot of jokes.
What do you think...
It's been a while.
How do you feel this strike going to affect the future of television and what gets made?
I mean, I think it's going to change everything. I don't think the studios were expecting a dual strike. I love that it happened. I wanted it to happen. I wanted all three. I wanted the directors to strike too.
Yeah, I know.
As much, you know, but I think they're going to lose a lot of programming. They're going to lose a lot of momentum on things. We're going to see a lot of cancellations. They're already ending people's overall deals, which are so important to growing sort of mid-level voices and talent. A lot of those people are like minorities, like Amy Inovi, who wrote for Insecure. She had an overall deal. So that's how you get more diversity in television. And all of that is going to be gone. I think we're going to start from a blank slate. And it'll just be studios going, what do we do? What right. needs to be made? What are people into? And there's mm-hmm. going to be a lot of scrambling while they try to figure out how they get content back, since everything's getting pushed by like a year and a half.
Right. I wonder, if I should revisit things I've pitched, where they're like, no. That's the history of my career. No, I'm sorry. No, that, you know what? You're gay. Who cares? No, Jew. No. Okay.
No.
It's just, yeah. Issa Rae sent you a thank you note.
Yeah.
I love that.
So did I.
And I know, I bet. Can you just talk about how that validated you as a,
As a creative, yeah. You know, so many people told me you're going to have the hardest time going from being a critic to a creative. Like, no one's ever going to want to work with you. People, you know, will have a hard time. They're going to see you as a journalist. And to have someone that I look up to creatively reach out to me and say, hey, you always gave our show a fair shot. I loved what you had to say. I always wanted my show to be written about on a site like the AV Club, and you gave it the respect it deserved. To me, it just proved to me that, like, I have a love and deep understanding for television that isn't me just trying to, you know, be a hater and get clicks on an article where I'm tearing things down. But it really is true criticism to appreciate what is good in a show and also say, hey, I question this choice. But it's all bundled, you know, in this, and just a love of the art, which I think now we're so afraid to have those conversations, to speak that way, because if you criticize anything, people are like, oh no, you hate all of it. Like, oh no, you hate me. Oh no.
And you're the devil. And everyone has a soapbox now, and they can all attack you personally.
Yeah. And it's like, you have to be positive and like everything. And that just really validated me and the fact that there are still creatives here who aren't like that.
Do you think that it's okay? Like, I've gotten people writing things or saying things about me that I'm like, oh my God, that's so nice. And then I'm like, oh, it's not appropriate. It's not appropriate. But do you give me permission to say thank you to, I mean, do critics like that? I guess they do like that.
Yeah.
I always think of them as white men who are like, well, I don't know about the next time, you know, like, I don't know. I just feel like there's like this boundary you're not supposed to.
I really respect the boundary. But I think that's one of those old school things about me, because I went to journalism camp. I'm all about sort of this like separate. Yeah. I'm a nerd, because nowadays most critics are just like, oh no, the lead in that TV show, she's my best friend. Like we post together on our TikTok. Like why? And of course I'm doing the profile on her and reviewing her show because I'm her bestie and I'm going to give it 5 stars. Yeah. So I think that's just like a difference for me, in this industry.
All right, before I ask my last two questions, who's your favorite, or who do you respect the most as a critic?
Ooh. That's okay. I'm going to go with Emily Vanderwerf. She wrote for the AV Club for a long time. Mm-hmm. She left before I was there. She was one of the critics that I read religiously. Like anything Emily, even if I didn't watch the show, I would read her criticism. And she was one of the people who really made me want to write. And I applied to be a critic at the AV Club. And when I applied, all I did was submit my entire senior thesis, which was like over 100 pages. By the way, don't recommend applying for a job that way. Don't just submit your entire senior thesis and go, don't I need this job? But I did that. And a few months later, Emily did an article on Sanford and Son in the history of Black TV.
Yeah.
And when I got a job there, at some point I got to talk to her and she was like, yeah, you sent in that your thesis and that inspired me to write that.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, oh my goodness, somebody actually read it and cared. And
I love that.
She like writes for Vox now and a few other places, but she was one of the people who, you know, when we disagreed on a show, she would say, let's have a panel and actually discuss our different points of view instead of feeling like it was an attack. So I always think of her work.
Oh, that I love that. And I love that it's a woman. Okay. First of all, thank you for doing my podcast. You're just the greatest.
And thanks for hunting me.
Always. I always ask my guests two questions. I think I know the answer to the one. The first one is what you do for your mental health. I know you took your Wellbutrin this morning. I took my Paxil last night. So is it, do you do anything else besides the meds or?
I smoke a lot of pot and I'm polyamorous. So I date a lot and have a lot of sex, I guess.
That's great. Mazel tov.
Yeah. It's pretty fun.
Wow. I really don't have a lot of time for that. Okay. I call my podcast Kill Me Now because everything gets on my fucking nerves to the point, like, it's not normal the reaction I have to things that annoy me. So what pisses you off and makes you fucking so mad, crazy?
Right now, it is documentaries on Vice that make me feel old. They're doing a whole series that's like the dark side of the 2000s, and they're talking about like TRL with slow dramatic music and voiceovers, like it's a Ken's Burn documentary.
Right.
And I'm just like, that's not long ago. Stop it. Like, this is not old.
I know. What is that? I feel so old with these things. I'm like, that happened yesterday.
That happened yesterday. They're truly just like dark side of the 2000s. Remember when Lindsay Lohan got in a car with Britney Spears and Paris Hilton? And I'm just like, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a meme. It just happened.
Yes, and.
What? Yeah,
it's
what
like
about
improv.
It? Yeah. And they're just like, well, it's so dark. And I'm just like, stop making me feel old. Stop doing this, okay?
You know
it's
what, Ashley?
Yet.
You don't know what it's like to feel old. Okay. Right. I mean, I just got back from Just for Laughs and it was like, they're all like 32. And I'm like, how old's your mother? And their mothers are younger than me. And I'm like, I'm fucking, what the fuck?
I'm 32. I didn't get JFL this year.
Oh God, I hate you. How old's your mom?
Next year. She's 72 now.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's an older mom. So
yeah, my mother was 41 when she had me. Oh God, we have so much in common. Okay. Yeah. Ashley, I can't thank you enough. You are a delight. I wish you only the best. And I really would love to get together. I know you're not a big fan of New York, but when you come to New York, I would love to get together.
I love coming for stand-up. I'm going to come this fall. My album will be out. I'm going to do a bunch of shows.
Oh, awesome. So. Name of album, please.
Ice Cream Money.
Ice Cream Money. Woo! Okay. We will promote that. And thank you. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening to part two of my conversation with Ashley Ray. This wonderful podcast, Kill Me Now, is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, marketed, posted, everything to buy Brittany Jo Sowards. Richmond. What else do I have to say? I talked about all the gigs I'm out. This Saturday, I'm in Pottstown at Soldiers. Please buy tickets to the show on November 6th at Gotham for the National Coalition Against Censorship. It's going to be an amazing show. Yeah, lots going on. I also wanted to recommend some books to you that I enjoyed. Noah Tishby wrote a book about Israel called Israel, the Most Misunderstood State. And let me look up the exact name of the book. It's a really great book to learn. It's an easy way to, you know, it is what it is. It's a simple guide, okay? A simple guide to the most misunderstood country on earth. Came out in 2021. It's a easy read and you will learn a lot. So why don't you buy that? It's Hanukkah's coming up. Buy that for your friends. Just read something. I also love Jews Don't Count by David Baddiel. It's a really good book. It's very short. And it's really interesting. It's a quick read and it's an important read. And there's just so many books out there. And there's so many opinions. I get people writing to me all the time, you know, I love you, but you're wrong. And it's like, you know, I am what I am. I am what I am. And what I am, I have, you know, I read a lot. I read a lot about this topic, and I have been to Israel multiple times, and I have formed my opinions about the conflict on my history about my father served in World War II. I don't, you know, 2%. I mean, it's awful. The whole thing is awful. But you should ask yourself some questions, you know, before. I mean, people pulling down posters of American hostages that are held. Like, what the fuck is that? What kind of act of disobedience is that? You know, and blaming Jews, American Jews, for what happened over there. The anti-Semitism is 488% increase. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's where my head is at. Do what you have to do, but the best thing to do is to learn and to listen. To learn and listen. Because whatever you're saying, what is that quote? Whatever you're saying, God, there's a quote that's basically whatever, when you talk, you already know what you're talking about. When you listen, you're learning something. So, whatever. I just pray for peace. I pray for the Jewish people. I pray for the innocent people who are caught in this. The innocent Palestinians are caught in this. Hamas is fucking shit and crap and duty and bullshit. And I am, you know, I believe Israel has a right to exist. But yeah, that's how I feel. So do yourself a favor and read, and then just go do nothing. And we got to take a break. I think it's really affecting people's mental health. I've talked to family members and they're just so down and depressed. And I get it. It's like, I have a stomach ache all the time, but you got to take care of yourself. So I'm thinking about you, and I, you know, if you're still listening, I'm just loving you more than anything in the entire world, as you know. But yeah, so thank you. You are the best, and come see me live. And as we always say, so long.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried and true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.